in case you want to call.
I'd like to reconvene the Marine Resources Commission. The next item on the agenda, item number 19, public hearing to amend Regulation 4 BAC 20-7-2010 to establish specifications for the 2006-2007 oyster harvest season. Dr. Weston.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, sir.
You want a long version, short version? You're pretty.
What I want is a version that is encompasses what needs to be encompassed, but no more.
All right.
How's that for an answer?
We'll try.
All right. If anybody's got any questions or go along, please feel free to ask.
All right. This time of year, we reset the harvest seasons for the coming winter. Just showing you the overall harvest figures. Last 2 years have been exceptionally good. Everything stars lined up right for us. We had spat sets during a drought in 2001 and 2002, followed by monsoon rains for 2003 and 4. Ended up getting harvest in areas that we hadn't seen harvest for years that were because we had survival from disease. And the 2004-05 season was around 80,000 bushels. And this past year was, all day is not in, but it'll probably end up being around 100,000 bushels, which is much higher than what we've been seeing in that little top insert there. And with last year's hurricane damage in the Gulf, it was really a godsend for the industry because it was the only place they had to get oysters from. But 2005 became more normal in salinity, and now 2006 actually was leaning a little bit towards droughtiness in the bay, even though we've had a couple of rain events. Have seen more disease mortality, both because of the salinities, but also because it was such a mild winter and the diseases never retreated very much in it. Diseases were high enough that actually VIMS put out an advisory in the middle of the summer, advising people to get oysters up as fast as they could if they had oysters out there. Plus in 2003 and 4, when we had the low salinities, we didn't have any spat set. So really, we've not seen very much spat set throughout the bay for 2003, 4, and 5. A little bit of good news is we are seeing some spat set in 2006 as we're starting off, but basically the harvestable stocks are very low. And because areas are so low, we're recommending for some of the areas that were open last year that to actually have some of them closed, and some of those were mentioned in your briefing for the Potomac Tribs, Piatank, Deep Rock Dredge area in the Middle Bay. Those areas, the stocks are so low that we're saying they should probably remain closed this year. The rest of the areas, recommending only a 3-month season, shortening the season from what we had last year. The date that we actually open the season is mostly, we usually try to work with industry and figure out when the best time for that date would be. We had our advisory meeting in September, and the Gulf is doing some unusual things this year. They had a little season in Louisiana in the middle of September. They're going to close for October and the first half of November. And that's actually the most important marketing time for oysters. It's probably trying to get some control of the market from down there because oysters are still available on private grounds, and so it's a good marketing tool for them. But where it leaves us is our main source will be shut off for October and November for a lot of the processing plants. Mississippi is probably not going to reopen again this year from what I've heard. So shell stock in the Gulf is going to be very, very limited. So the advisory committee thought that the best thing for Virginia would be to have our seasons open on October 1st. And for however long they last, it'll be very important for them for getting shell stock, and probably the market will be the best for the harvester and getting the best prices. And really, you can see on that table, just about everywhere recommended for that October 1st start. The only place that there's been a request for something different is for Tangier and Pocono Sounds. In that area around Tangier, they're surrounded by water. They do other things in the fall, a lot of them, and they'd rather have their season come in when it normally does, later in the winter, so that they have something to do in the middle of the winter. And that seems reasonable to us, even though there had been a recommendation from the Shellfish Management Committee to have everybody open on October 1st and then keeping their season on December 1st. We had originally recommended lowering the bushel per man limit to 8 to try to make the harvest last a little bit longer in the management committee. It had been 12 last year. They decided that split the difference and to take 10. That'll give them a little bit more to make up for their fuel and things. Whether or not they'll be able to catch that limit, we don't know. But basically, that limit is just a way to distribute the catch through the season. There may be some requests in the public hearing to open areas that are now closed and have been closed for a long time. And staff's recommending that these areas not be taken up. We've taken them up in the past just about every year. We now have a Blue Ribbon Orchard panel that's in session and is going through all the management things that we do for orchards, as well as all the replenishment activities that we do. And we've been following the first Blue Ribbon Orchard panel recommendations since 1993. This will be several more months for this panel to be meeting at least. And we would recommend that we don't open up any areas till after this panel is finished. For that reason, you got a whole lot of stuff in your briefing material in case these issues come up. But really, I won't go into them unless you get some questions and you want to know more information about them. The final the two issues, that basically takes care of the seasons and the bushel limits. Because we had unusual harvest in 2004-05 and 2005-06, unusually high, we saw harvest in the summer that we've not seen for years. Because of that, we had a few occurrences of diseases of the species Vibrio that cause human health issues, and we have been requested by Shellfish Sanitation to begin incorporating some regulations on summer harvest. And I think maybe the best thing to do right now for me is if I stop for a second and let Delegate Whitman, Rob Whitman from Shellfish Sanitation, speak to you on this issue, and then I'll pick up with what our recommendations are after he tells you about what the situation is.
That'll be fine. Mr. Whitman, in this capacity,
yes, sir.
Delegate
yes,
Whitman,
sir.
Good to have you here, sir.
Commissioner Bowman, members of the commission, it's an honor and a privilege to be with you today. Just as Mr. Wesson had stated, Dr. Wesson had stated, we are in a situation here in Virginia of facing potential harvest controls in the years to come. And let me explain. Virginia is a member state in the Interstate Shellfish Sanitation Conference. And that's a consortium of states, the shellfish industry, and the Food and Drug Administration. And it's a unique program in that the states, the industry, and the Food and Drug Administration determine the requirements that states have to meet in order to ship their shellfish into interstate commerce. And that is essentially public health controls to make sure that oysters that come here or clams that come here from Louisiana are meeting the same standards as those that are shipped here from Virginia to other states. So it's sort of a leveling of the playing field. Under that particular program, because of problems with naturally occurring bacteria, specifically these Vibrio bacteria, there have been some requirements that have been adopted that states have to meet. And a particular bacteria, Vibrio vulnificus, through the ingestion of raw molluscan shellfish, can have a mortality rate of up to 50% in those folks that have underlying health conditions. It is not a pleasurable disease. It is something that we have to deal with. The conference, in dealing with that, has set out some requirements. A national goal of reducing cases of disease from oysters by 40% by 2006. And we will achieve that, but we will achieve that because of an anomaly, because of Hurricane Katrina and the reduced harvest in the Gulf, and number two, because the state of California has essentially banned shellfish from the Gulf of Mexico unless they're post-harvest treated to reduce Vibrios. Where we are in Virginia is just this past year, we had one case of Vibrio vulnificus. Now, we have had some cases in the past, but they have not been attributed solely to Virginia shellfish. It doesn't mean that it didn't come from Virginia shellfish. It's just like everything else. There are other oysters involved in consumption. If we have the second case, we will be in the same predicament as the Gulf states, and that is we will have to adopt measures in order to control harvest, potentially if we don't meet an illness reduction goal by the year 2009. We have to meet 40% by 2006, and that will occur. 2009 is the next goal, and the nation has to meet a 60% reduction goal. Now, if we have one more case, we're in the same club as the Gulf states, which means the state of California will look at Virginia shellfish just as they do Gulf shellfish. And it will mean that if the nation doesn't meet those requirements, Virginia will be required from May through October to close oyster harvesting or regulate oyster harvesting for shucking only, or to only allow oysters harvested during that period to go to post-harvest treatment processes. Those are processes that reduce Vibrio vulnificus to non-detectable levels. And there are only two facilities in the state of Virginia that have certified, validated processes in order to treat those oysters. Our thought is that we believe we can put some controls in place that will minimize the potential for another case of disease. It will not eliminate the possibility, but it will minimize that. And we believe if we do that, we might be able to stay out of that distinction that we don't want to take on, and that is the distinction that the Gulf states have. And if you ask them as far as marketing their shellfish and the things that it means to them in the marketplace, Virginia does not want to be there. Just as Dr. Weston spoke of, in working with FDA, we believe it's purely an issue of exposure. There's nothing that's really changed in the Chesapeake Bay. Those naturally occurring bacteria have been there for years, and they've been there in the same concentration for years. Like anything else, the more oysters people eat, the more potentially they are exposed, because we've had good harvest over the past several years and greater harvest during the warm weather months. We expect to see these cases of disease. And we work with the Food and Drug Administration. They have a disease model that they put certain inputs in. They said, well, if you allow harvest at 85 degrees, if you have harvest of X thousands of bushels, they'll tell you exactly how many cases of disease that you can expect. So what we've looked at is to propose some harvest controls that will reduce the potential for us to get that second case and hopefully not put us in the position of having to take some of these what we consider draconian measures come the beginning of 2009. So that's where we are, and that's the reasoning behind us starting the conversation with the commission about what we can do to avoid that. We thought it would be better to be proactive than it would to be reactive after or when we get that second case. And I don't think it's a matter of if. I just think it's a matter of when.
Well, Doctor, we appreciate you bringing that to our attention. I mean, all you have to do is look at the spinach epidemic that we've just had. I mean, it's not a whole lot different. I mean, you're still talking about a commodity. You're talking about a commodity that's shipped across the country that has widespread ramifications. And, I mean, I think I read where a poor farmer in King George County was going to lose up to $700,000 if they didn't figure out what was going on pretty soon, and he had absolutely nothing to do with it. So the onus is on all of us, I think, to do everything that we possibly can to prevent us from, as you say, correctly say, joining that club.
Yeah.
And law enforcement, we've always prided ourselves in really doing the very best we could to keep down the disease and whatever. And Virginia shellfish has been one of the ones that's been renowned as being, you know, the most healthy that you can possibly have. We'd like to continue that. Is it going to be some extra work for the harvesters? Absolutely. For law enforcement, no doubt about it. We're going to have to do something together in order to satisfy the requirements, because they're there. Doctor, thank you very much for that. And are you going to be around for a little while if any questions come up?
Absolutely. Yes, I will.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Yep. Dr. Wilson?
Well, with that said, I mean, we've only started making these changes, and in your regulation, staff recommendations so far are merely for dredging on private grounds for the period from May till the end of September to stop 10 o'clock and to be into the dock within an hour of ending harvest. And the other part would be that we're requiring shading over the areas that the orchards are being stored. Now, we're definitely going to have to come back sometime in the spring and deal with this again, and we're going to work with Rob on that through the Shellfish Committee. But, I mean, we're not dealing right now at all with seaside, where you have to go out on tides. nor are we dealing with asphalt right now. These are only for dredging on the private ground.
Well, when we did, Dr. Whitman, you had a comment.
Just one added comment. We've had a lot of feedback from folks on this. The thing we're concerned about is limiting that time at temperatures above 45 degrees. What we think would help, if the commission would like to consider it, is anybody harvesting or providing the ability to harvest after 10 o'clock if folks have onboard refrigeration. And we would think that we would allow food-grade coolers on board with ice to make sure that the catch is cooled right there on board. So it would allow folks that may be under conditions of long time to travel to harvest grounds, that they could do that after that 10 o'clock. They would continue to have shading, but if they had onboard refrigeration, it could be mechanical if they wanted to, or it can be food-grade coolers with ice in a drain cooler to where they're not floating in the ice water. We've talked about that. I've spoken to FDA, and they also believe that would be an adequate measure to make sure that we control the growth of different animals.
Jim, help me a little bit. Does the reg, as written, allow for that, President?
No, that's the kind of thing that I think we'll get into.
We have to do it later on.
Exemptions from this.
Okay.
We know we got to deal with it before next summer. So.
Okay.
And we're at the end of the season. So.
Okay.
And then the final little change in your regulation is a minor change in how we replant seed orchards and when they can be taken up. Because historically we had a problem in the James River with people going to the public grounds, harvesting orchards that were just sub-market size, or just on seed grounds you can take any size. They would then take those orchards up, go to the private ground, and if law enforcement was around, they'd put those down and then just harvest them back up. Or if law enforcement wasn't down, they just would make the trip over to the private ground and then come on in. Years ago, an additional step was put in the seed planting procedures, being that they had to be left alone until the end of the season to discourage that practice. This past year, again, because we saw things we hadn't seen before with people wanting to harvest, since the commissioner has the right in this regulation, if we come to him at the end of the hand harvest season, hand tong season for James, we can just buy. Commissioner can extend it from the end of April till the end of June. And we did that this past year, and some people wanted to get there, start working on their seed early to beat the disease that we knew was coming, and because of the higher salinities. We actually worked it out with law enforcement, allowed that this year, but we've gone ahead at this point and put in the regulation that you can start reharvesting your seed after March 31st. Because that basically is long enough to be in the spirit of moving the seeds forward, actually grow out. So any questions?
Any questions for Dr. Wilson?
Yeah.
Mr. Fox?
Jim, this is just a technical item, but on the 4 VAC 27-2050 closed harvest season areas, 4D, I think you do not want to mark through those areas, because those are supposed to be the areas that are closed, and all of those areas are closed. That's the way I'm reading it, but I may be wrong.
Page 5 of 9,
4D. Yeah. If those are the areas that are closed, you want them all closed. That time period of thing.
So by scratching through them, you're saying that's basically opening them?
Well,
yeah.
What we're saying is nothing's here. Our closure is just part of that. Yeah, the doors are struggling through and closed completely. But they're not listed in here.
Right. The ones we struck through are closed permanently.
Yeah, but it doesn't. Where does it say that? They are supposed to be closed permanently, yeah.
The regulation does two things. It describes those areas that are open.
But it puts...
listed puts, there, it provides it, you the dates where it's open. Then in the next section, it describes the seasons when those same rocks are closed.
So we have a reciprocal.
So if it's not listed... If it's not listed in the open area, it's closed.
Well, the open...
The only areas that are open are those found...
Okay, maybe you're right. Maybe you're right, but I think...
Your point is well taken.
You could say that under 4D, all areas are closed from January 1 to September 30, except elements, but... It's a drafting issue. We don't need to spend any more time on it.
Yeah.
Take a look at it and get it right.
Yeah, the A has all the other areas.
Oh, okay.
So if you strike through an area in D, it's now actually included under A.
Okay.
Any other questions? Mr. Schick.
Somewhat on topic, but a little bit off. I wanted to talk about replenishment program for Potomac tributaries. I know that last year we didn't quite get enough time to get the full quota moved over, and I was hoping we might be able to start a little earlier on the program, and maybe, I don't know, if October or by November we can get something down as far as how much, and so we can start that a little earlier.
We can start somewhat earlier, but you have to wait till after it gets cold enough that you're not going to lose your stuff.
Yeah, well, but as far as getting it to us so we can, and that way the watermen can plan to do it. But
we only need an extra month that right. I can come in January instead of coming in February.
That was the question I was going to ask, Jim. I'd like to know when the replacement report will be.
I mean, normally I wait until February. I can come in January.
January or as soon as you can practically do it.
Yeah.
That would be great. That way, your point is well made, Mr. Schick. There are certain things that have been described to us that maybe we can do, especially to help in those closed areas up in the tributaries of the Potomac that would help the watermen out up there as well. So, thank you.
Okay.
Any other questions for Dr. Wesson? Okay. The public hearing is now open pertaining to the oyster season in the Commonwealth of Virginia. John? Mr. DeMaria, good to have you here, sir.
Oh, thank
good
you
to
very
see
much.
You again.
Thanks for saying that. It's been a long time since I've been here. How are you guys doing? And I'm real pleased that I have the opportunity to talk to you. And what I wanted to talk about was
Mr. Whitman talking about,
and Jim Weston's talking about with this disease, the problem with that would be just a severe blow to my family as well as everybody else in the state. I as a waterman and I as owner of DeMaria Seafood would suffer tremendously from that because of summertime. That's when I sell my oysters with almost uninhibitedly because I don't have as much competition. And I'm not real big time, but I mean, this summer we'd sell 600-700 boxes of oysters every week, and it's very, very successful for us. The big problem that I have with this curtailment of harvesting is some of the areas that we have oysters growing are so inundated with mussels that the time frame for being able to successfully harvest them is just incredible. And I brought some here that I'd like to show you just so you can see what I'm talking about. You can see what fishermen have to go through to get these things. There's oysters in this, believe it or not.
Did you bring an oyster knife?
This is a Valentine alligator.
There's oysters in here.
It's muscles to me.
You want to, but it went well.
You get a knife there with
it? They're just covered with mussels.
And the mussels?
Cockles and mussels.
I mean, there's a nice, succulent, fat oyster there that you guys would really enjoy eating.
But the amount of time that it takes to take that oyster out of all those mussels is probably 10 or 15 seconds for one of these fishermen sitting there with a hatchet. And if we're reduced to where we can only harvest these things for 3 or 4 hours a day, the amount that they would catch, you would make it hard for them to pay for their fuel. And so I've just, being able to put refrigeration on the boat so that we can work longer is great. I had another idea that I thought as a fisherman catches one bushel, he could put it in an aquaculture sack and throw it overboard with a buoy, and then at the end of the day, pick them all up and come in. That way they're not sitting in the hole of the boat. There's some other factors, too, that are very important. A lot of the oyster beds that I have and other people have, they're in shallow water, which means they're not accessible till high tide. And, you know, as you know, you have high tide twice a day. And if we got a window that we can work of only 4 hours, that puts us in a situation where we can't work every day to catch those oysters. Another situation that I have, and some other people may have, is I have an oyster bed that's right next to the ship channel. And that particular oyster bed, the tide runs so hard that the only time that you can work there is like 1 hour on either side of slack water. And, of course, you have four tides a day. Every 6 hours you have a tide. So that would mean you've got 2 hours. That every 6 hours,
the likelihood of being able to harvest goes down appreciably.
Well, one day out of every 6 days you'd be able to work, because you can only work 1 hour on either side of slack water, and that diminishes 1 hour each day. And I have fishermen that work for me sometimes, and they have kids like many of us do, and they have to get them on a school bus where they can go to work. And I know that's a problem. They don't, you know, with some of these one-person families, you know, they have to go to work a little bit later. And so they, you know, having to come in at 10 o'clock would be a problem. I just hate for there to be some kind of regulation where they just say 10 o'clock, there can't be no boats out there, period. And there ought to be some way that we can comply with what's necessary to have a safe product for everybody to have. There ought to be some way we can do that. And it concerns me that we're not going to take a simple way for regulatory purposes and just say 10 o'clock, we can't do nothing after that.
Well, the only other way you could do that, Mr. DeMaria, is I think what it's based upon is based on temperature. Uh-huh. And temperature being taken by one person at a different location is subjective in nature. It makes it for a very difficult law to enforce. I think that's what Dr. Wesson was indicated, that as we get closer to this specific time, that the door will be open to mention or to discuss any type of things. We don't want to be overly burdensome at all. Mm-hmm. I've never, in law enforcement, I've never believed in overly burdensome regulations just for the sake of there being a regulation. It makes it bad for the police officer, and it makes it really bad for the waterman. The problem is, and I don't mean to sound flippant, is that if we don't undertake these measures, Dr. Whitman, you won't have to worry about any of the things you talked about, because the hammer will be there and we're down.
I understand that 100%. I know the problems with diseases. I know what you're talking about with spinach. It would be just a fatal blow if we couldn't work in the summertime period. That would just be absolutely horrible. I just think there's some other things that we could do. It's like I was talking to Mr. Whitman the other day, is if we could just take the oysters and put them in an aquaculture bag and put them overboard 1 hour after they're caught, and then come back and pick them up at the end of the day we're working.
That's one thing to consider. We've got a ways to go before we actually get to that point. So those thinking caps on for the next 6 months or whatever. We're all ears, and we're all here to work toward the same common goal.
And then another thing too, isn't it, I mean, I don't mean to belittle this, but it's not like you have one case of Vibrio, you have one more case forever that causes it, or is it just...
It's forever.
Okay, so it's not like annually, it's like...
No, I wish it was. For the other Vibrio trachymolyticus, it's annually. For Vibrio bonificus, it's forever.
Well, thank you very much for the opportunity.
Thank you. And by the way, I'm not going to keep these for 30 days as we normally do. Evidence for the record, you're more than welcome.
You want me to pick them? Yeah. And also, these are the nice single oysters that
you're
catching. You know, yeah. Yeah. Like, this, you know, it's no problem. We can work very fast and effectively, but when they're like that.
Where'd they come from, John?
Those came from Squash's Hole. Okay. I got plenty of oysters there, but they're just inundated with mussels. So the guys go on the other side of the river and work where there are no mussels.
Okay. Thank you so much, sir. Appreciate it. Who's next? Mr. Jenkins, come forward, sir.
Doug Jenkins again, representing Twin River Waterman Association. Y'all would sell them arses with muscles on them, he wouldn't have to sell as many as arses. You'd catch them quicker too. Couldn't pass that up and get a bushel of muscles I bought. I just want a clear understanding when I leave here today, particularly the tributaries of Potomac, what's open and what's closed. And my simple analysis of it would be open all public available arsograms in that area for a limit of time. Not particularly for the whole season, but for maybe a month and a half. And if the bids were at a depletion point where it needed to be closed, close it. And the reason I'm asking that is because we have the watermen in the area, most of them had to travel either to the Rappahannock or the James last year during the arse season. And if you remember that time, gasoline was around close to $3 a gallon, $2.80 or something. It's about 180 miles round trip from the Waterman area to James River. And then when they're working 6-7 miles on a boat, that motor's running the whole time. So the watermen in our area suffered greatly last year because of fuel expense. It was either that or coming down and staying in a hotel or a motel. We have some arsograms in the tributaries of Potomac. Some of them were open, and those that were open were worked later. They weren't open at first. Took several meetings for me to come down here and beg for that. Mr. Fox smiling over there. But anyway, that was the case. And then after we did get it open, there was confusion what was open and what was closed. We won't go through that. We don't need to waste your time with that. Some of you are aware of what happened, some of you not. But during my conversation with Dr. Weston on the advisory committee, Shellfish Advisory Committee. And during that time back there then, we had two or three different viewpoints of why they were closed. One was that they had other players in the arena of restoration, and that those areas were to be kept closed for that purpose. Other comments was made that there were private leases around the Vale of Survey, and that those that were private leaseholders was worried and concerned about the watermen working over the lines on their area. And I represent watermen. Some of those watermen are fine, upstanding, credible people, and they wouldn't think of going on somebody's private bed. Some of them aren't. They're human beings. And as you know, that they will go on anybody's ground if they want to. But from my perspective, I would like to think that most of them are pretty honest people. and they know the circumstances. If they were working on a private bid and if they were caught, then they were going to be found or go to court, whatever. I think it's only fair that the bailiff ground that was set aside in 1880-some, under the laws and under that statute of the Commonwealth, that they for the general public. They should be utilized for the general public. A lot of just general public, not necessarily watermen, they may be farmers, they may be other people that live in the area that has looked to these places for the glory to get them a mess of oysters, which is perfectly legal during oyster season, to have them some for table use. They do not understand these bottoms as a number. I know we're living in an age of a number. Everybody's got a number. But they are referred to as areas by name. Cotton Catch, Crowbar, Vaughn's Point, Nominee Cut, Dean's, King Cobb's Cove, whatever. Go to any river you want. Same thing, Rappahannock, Gumming Ground, Temple Point, Maratica, whatever. They're known as a word and as a location. These grounds, when they was publicly notified to be closed, they was notified by a number. And a lot of people was unaware of that. So you have that problem there. But to make a long story short, I think we'll simplify things. But a opening area in the tributaries of the Potomac. Let's go back to where it used to be. They first the arse season, areas was open everywhere. That left watermen in that particular area to work close by home, make a day's work. You wouldn't have to travel all over the country. Go to a strange or a river where maybe probably had never worked before, try to work and follow the other boats. This would disperse the boats. Once the area is, if it's worked so that it's very few horses there, they're going to leave it in there. They're not going to work there anymore. It would pay him to go to another river and work. But I like to see these areas work. I like to see them. Some of the areas have been closed and these mounds of shells have been put on them. And I've expressed this to some of y'all before. Your older members, your newer ones are not aware of it. The shells been piled up on them and they act like groins in shallow water with the boat wakes. They continue to, shells keep, continue to cover and seal, destroying some valuable bottoms that used to be productive and workable. We have a lot of seed in the upper part of the James River. I appreciate Mr. Schick's comments that in the upcoming replenishing season that we have a time frame there so that we can move seed to these areas, because it's very unlikely that we'll ever have a set in those areas because of the freshness of the water and the disease oysters that's coming out of the upper James River. We'll tolerate the salinity there because the salinity there doesn't reach at the high levels that they do in other parts of the bay. If there's a concern, in which I know there is to some, that the areas are small and can't be worked, that is not correct. Or small boats using small hand dredges can work in an area the size of this room and catch the oysters off it and not bother anybody else. I think it's time that we go to that. We recommended that the Shellfish Advisory Committee. One large planter there said he didn't see anything wrong with it, that his private lease was always all the way around one public rock on the Rappahannock. And he didn't mind that being open. So considering that, I really would like for y'all to pass that this year, and of course not go through the hassle that we went through last year of being sort of on it. End of the totem pole. That's all I have to say on it. Any questions or comments? Matter of fact, although we are tributaries of Potomac, we're just part of Virginia's James or Rappahannock. And we don't have any arsons in Potomac anymore. We have very few at the low end of it, and watermen do have to leave that area to go to other areas. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Jenkins.
Mr. Chairman, I have one question.
Sorry. Yes, sir.
Doug, just to understand your request, you're requesting that the Potomac tributaries be open to hand scraping?
Yes, sir.
How do you respond to staff's concerns that have been raised about the low level of oysters in those areas?
Well, to be frankly with you, sometimes staff and I don't agree because unless we're able to work there, we'll never know whether there's low or high. By that method of sampling, sometimes is not quite as accurate as I have. Not everybody can judge your area and get a few tested at it. It's a little different than a pattern tong where you make a grab here, make a grab over here or somewhere. But some of those areas have been closed for 15 or 18 years. If they don't have any arches on them by now, they never will. So what difference does it make? Not to be sharp with your question.
Thank you.
I do know some of the ones that did was work last year didn't have any. Had more shells than had arches. We would have to catch sometimes as much as 80 or 100 bushels of shells to catch 7-8 bushels of arches. So we don't need no more shells. We need anything. We need seed arches. So, any more questions?
So you're asking kind of two things. One is you want all the areas that were open last year to hand scraping, open this year to hand scraping. Plus you're asking for additional baler grounds to be open to hand scraping.
Yes, sir. We like to have them all open. Like to try them. If they're not in the arches they have, and they're not open, then put a time. I'll know what's out there. I go board the boats if I ain't working myself. And I'll come down in and ask them to be closed. I mean, some of you might not know me, but I try to tell it like it is. I'll kid with you and joke about a fishing story, how big it was or how big it got away, but I'm serious when it comes to fishing. All right. Anybody else got a question?
I have a question.
Mr. Bowman.
Doug, would you be satisfied if you rotated areas?
Yes, sir. I believe in that. I believe in keeping some areas closed and putting seed on them, and when they get big enough to harvest, harvest them. I don't believe in sitting there expecting for something to happen. The watermen's not in position for the restoration of this Chesapeake Bay. Those who have polluted it and who is killing it should be the ones to clean it up, not ours. Arson is a filter, but if they wait around for the arson to get it there so deep to filter in the bay, then if no one in year 2000 or 3000 is going to be around here to harvest the arson.
Thank you.
That's a pretty broad statement, but that's the way I feel.
Thank you.
Anybody else got a question?
Thank you, sir. Anyone else? Yes, sir. Come forward. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Step your name, please, for the record.
My name is Diane Dallas from Tangier, representing the Tangier Waterman Association. And first, I'd like to ask Dr. Weston a question. Last year, our limit was 8. How far away? Is that going to stay the same, or is ours going to 10?
Oh, yours
stay
the same.
Oh, that's fine. We're satisfied with that because, you know, we're not expecting a We'd like to stretch it out through the winter, and we would like December because, as Mr. Dr. Wesson stated, that we don't have a lot of other options. You know, we do need winter work, and we'd also like to ask. We'd like to ask for a couple rocks. It's been closed for a long time. I don't know how it'll go over, but Nyacock has been closed. I don't know how many years. It's been a lot of years. We'd like to get that open, and maybe, as Mr. Jenkins said, as a, you know, a trial time at least, just for a little while. We'd also like to ask, with the price of oil going up, and you know, we're figuring on it, you know, probably not going down much. That we could catch a couple bushel of crabs a boat. It used to be back in the early 80s. That's what it was, 2 bushels per boat. And you know, we've got together, and that's what we'd like to ask for, at least a couple bushels of crabs to help out with expense, with the wages, and everything else. And if there's any other questions.
Any questions? Thank you, sir. Any other comments? No, the matter is before the commission for discussion. Mr. Robbins?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. During the public comments, Mr. Jenkins pointed out that he believed the commission had a responsibility to open the public grounds in the Potomac. And I guess the concern I have is that we do have a public trust responsibility here and a responsibility to make decisions that are consistent with the standards for fisheries management. And one of those is, of course, that they be based on the best available science. And I think the evidence that we have before us, presented by staff, is that the conditions in that area are not conducive to being open to harvest. The staff report we have indicates that there haven't been any significant spat sets in the last 5 years in that area. And furthermore, that the areas contain the only remaining stocks of oysters in the tributaries. And if environmental conditions do become conducive to a natural spat set, these oysters will be critical to any chance of recovery. This request is not coming in the context of a resource that's doing well. It's coming in the context of a resource that's doing very poorly by historical standards. And I think I don't think it would be prudent to open those tribs at this time to harvesting, based on the evidence that's before us and absent any contrary evidence.
I think you make a good point. One of the things that we're doing now that you're well aware of is a Blue Ribbon Oyster Panel. There's a lot of discussion going on as to what's working, what's not working. They're having very candid and frank discussions that, quite honestly, haven't been made in such an open discussion type forum in the 14 years that I've been here. So I think the Blue Ribbon Panel is working. Still needs time to complete its work. You mentioned the public trust doctrine. That you're right. We do have to do the very best to maintain the resource based on the best available science. I think we let the Blue Ribbon Oyster Panel work, keeping in mind what Mr. Schick said pertaining to repletion, to try to get an idea of what we can do for the upper tribs. Because as I told Mr. Jenkins last week in a discussion that we had, nobody agrees any more than I do that the tributaries of the Potomac are just as important as the James River or any other river in the Commonwealth of Virginia. And the citizens that work there are just as much citizens anywhere else. So I think we're on the right track. I think we should continue the course with the Blue Ribbon Oyster Panel at the present time, see what they have to say, and I know it's probably been, I know a lot of people are thinking, well, here we go again. But I'm anxious to hear what the panel has to say prior to making a decision next year pertaining to that resource, because depending upon what comes out, good, bad, or indifferent, I may tend to look at things just a little bit differently after the panel has completed its work. Mr. Fox.
I pay a lot of attention to Table 4, or Attachment 2, which is the Virginia's oyster ground production over the past, well, all the way back to 57, if you go over to Jim's chart, it actually goes back into the 1900s. But there's nothing that I would like more than to be able to vote to open all the public grounds. And but when you look at that chart, and with the tiny, tiny numbers at the bottom of the chart in current years, I think it would be irresponsible to do just that. If we were back having harvest like we had in 82, 86, 600,000, 700,000, yes, I can make an argument that we should open them. But I think we are in a time of crisis, and I think we have to take the best scientific advice that we have, which Dr. Westman has provided. And certainly you can question his methods, but in when numbers are this small, I don't think he can be that far off. I have to support the recommendation of staff.
Mr. Shook.
The way that the staff's recommendation is, it still allows for the tributaries to be hand-scraped like it was at the end of last year, or does it go back to tonguing only?
Jim, want to respond to that? Because we
what's open in the tribs of Potomac is just the nomina where we've moved the seed.
Right.
That's all. And that's open for hand-scraping.
Hand-scraping.
Yes.
Does everybody in law enforcement understand that one of the reasons I have the entire law enforcement group here is for many years, oysters were not that big a part of the duties that we did. Then in the last several years, oysters have become more important. I wanted every law enforcement supervisor here today to hear what's going on. So what we'll do is, just to make sure, Dr. Weston, before we leave, is that the officers are briefed and will understand the same questions are being posed by members of the commission. So we do not have a repeat of the misunderstandings that have occurred in the past for whatever reason. Any other questions? Comments? Mr. Bowden.
Well, first I'm going to agree with Doug on one thing. I'm not really fond of the surveying methods either, which we had a taste of that in Chincoteague Bay, but we'll not get into that. But I can't understand why we can't do a rotation thing where we are planting more than one area. But if Doug thinks there's several areas that have oysters, he could consult with Jim and maybe bring them back to the next meeting, and we could try a couple areas. I'm in agreement with him. You know, I've made this statement before when we were talking about Eric Hansen oysters. None of us is going to be alive. Even though Rip just turned 40, none of us is going to be alive when the oysters come back on their own, period. And you made a statement a while ago, the panel wants to see what's been successful and what hasn't. Well, that's easy. Everything's in the what hasn't category. You look at what's been successful, it's empty. All you got is an empty piece of paper. So, you know, if they think a few areas need to be tried, and they think it, you know, I can't see where we're letting a great deal go. You know, last year I was adamant we do not need to open the seed oyster area in the James River to any kind of hand scrape or anything. That's our golden goose. And we don't want to take a chance with that. But these other areas that's been closed for 18 years, I agree with that. There's no oysters there now. They're not going to be any there 18 years from now. They've had 18 years. Evidently, it's never a fat set there, or it's been such a rare occurrence over the last millennium that, you know, when nobody was working for 500 years, they built up over a very long period of time. So I really think we could open a few of the places in tributaries, the ones that they think really are productive and need to be looked at.
Did you have your hand up first?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I did. It was slightly off that subject and on the issue of the Vibrio management. Just briefly on that, I think we do need to move forward with that. It sounds like, as Delegate Whitman mentioned, there may be some alternative management strategies for coping with that and dealing with that as an industry and agency that we can add to the
suite of regulations that are before us, hopefully before the season starts. So perhaps some of Mr. DeMaria's suggestions can be considered by staff, and I'm sure the committee will be addressing that prior to that.
Mr. Fox?
I just had a question for Dr. Wesson. Jim, does it? I know you've used the best statistical methods you know of to sample these areas and determine which ones need to be closed and which ones can be open. But in light of Mr. Jenkins' comments, would it make any sense to sample some of those tributaries of the Potomac another time to just verify your initial findings?
We've already done them this fall.
Yeah.
We've done those areas this fall. And actually, there was a spat set this year. Very small, but there was a spat set in these areas that we haven't seen a spat set in a good while. So, the few areas that remain closed in the just as an example of this river, this, you know, what we're talking about has a feel. I mean, it's a hodgepodge: Lewis, private, red, public. This is Ucomico, and as an example, last year, this area, basically here, was open, the bigger grounds. The few areas that have horses on them right now are way up the prongs. One up here at the place called Palmer's. There's one here that's wrapped with the private grounds all around it. We have a reef right beside it. There's a little one right here that's got some orchards on it. I mean, those orchards, that they maintain themselves. They have gone through all the year classes. You know, when we see a spat set in, the last time we had a spat set was around 2000 in there. And where they've gone is that we can actually see, track them through. And right now there's nothing there but big orchards on a place about as big as this room. And now this year is a little bit of spat set. What we are starting to do is we have moved seed into all these areas before, and we've harvested them. This year we moved seed into nomina, and we started this rotation where we moved into nomina, and we're ready for harvesting there. If we move more seed this next year, we'll move into the Ocomico and the Cone, and those will be ready for harvest next year. But at least for what we have right now, the standing stocks are incredibly low. I mean, if you wanted to hand dog in these areas, we wouldn't have any problem with them. But there's not enough there for you to go hand dog on them. It's just when you get into a very efficient gear like the hand scrapes that they'd be gone in a couple of days. They'd be gone, and then the problems start arising with them going from there on to other places close by on private grounds. And while we were up there surveying 2 weeks ago, we had people come up and talk to us, you know, jokingly say, you know, you don't need to be surveying that reef because I got that one last year, and that's out of the harvest area. So if these areas are, we've actually put a lot of money through one of the many hats that Delly Whitman has worn over time as a member of the Board of Supervisors and has worked with the Commission, and we had a Westmoreland County Horseshoe Heritage Program where their Board of Supervisors helped us to get money for restoration of sanctuary reefs and harvest area, rebuilding the harvest areas in the rivers in Westmoreland County. And we were really successful in getting places set, but I mean, the problem that we've had in all this stuff is not that we didn't move seed, it's that we had cowlands raised. And when we move seed, they don't last. And it's no different this year. The nominal seed is mostly gone that we moved from cowlands raised. So, I mean, we're in a mess with cowlands raised. We have things that we can do to bring orchards back in these tributaries, but then we're stifled by something that's really out of our control. And we haven't moved the seed. Had all the seed lived that we put up there, there would be stuff in these areas for them to work on. But the rays always get them first.
Any other questions? I can remember specifically after this day meeting with the former commissioner and asking him what one of the toughest days of his year was, and this is one of them. He used to tell me that the day that you had to set oyster season was one of the toughest because there's a fine line between what you want to do and sometimes what you have to do. And sometimes the line is blurred. I think what we have here is a situation where the Blue Ribbon Oyster Panel is working. And I know it's like, well, here we go, one more year. I understand that. I can understand why you feel that way or why some would feel that way. But at the same time, in all due respect, Mr. Bowden, I still think that we have to let that process work its way through, see what comes out of it, and hopefully we can find some success to put on that one page. As just one. If we have, hey, look.
You might find one.
We may find one. It's difficult. It's a difficult position to be in when you've got people that you know are telling you the truth, Mr. Jenkins, that believe very strongly in what they're saying. But at the same time, you have science on the other hand that you have to weigh against observation. And it's tough. This is one of those times where it is very difficult to sit in this position. But having said that, the matter is before the commission for action. I'm sorry? Yes, sir, Mr. Jenkins.
I'd like to make one other little comment if you may. Last year, our area in the regular council was closed. Part of it, most of it was closed because of a water problem. And I approached my delegate, Whitman, here to look into that matter and find out where that pollution was coming from so they couldn't be open. And he did, and it is open now. The people that work that area only could work part of it because of the exposure area. That area has arches on it. And the other question that I don't understand from Big Ben that only the tributary of Nominee and King Chopco is going to be open for hamburgers this year. No comments in the phone and other places that were open asking for the phone. Is that your recommendation to talk about?
Yes.
So we're really getting that this year and what we got last year. And that's a hard pill for us to swallow. And I'm going to tell you my intention right now, so you know where I'm coming from, and I'm on to the panel. First thing I'm going to do, I'm going to write the governor about state letter, going back to last year and making a full analysis of what's going on. And then, at the end of that letter, I'm going to tell him that I'm going to have to take other procedures that I tried to work for to direct things over to the diplomat. And it has a result in that. And whatever that brings forth is something that the commission has to come to that deals.
Thank you, sir. The matter is before the commission for action.
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Robbins.
Thank you. Move to approve staff recommendations.
Second. There's a second to the motion.
I'd like to ask for a friendly amendment. That's why I'd asked this earlier. I think that the tributaries of the Potomac River should have the same areas open that they had at the end of last year. Not just the Nominee, but all of them.
I would not accept that as a friendly amendment.
These guys need to go, every place has bad oysters. They're dying all across the bay. But, you got them in Tangier that they can fish them. They got them in Rappahannock. You got them in the James. We don't have them in the Potomac. And these guys need a place to catch some oysters. And I'm not asking to open up grounds that have been closed for a long time. They oystered them last year. They should be able to oyster them this year.
Is there a second to Mr. Robbins' motion?
Second.
Second by Mr. Tankard. All in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed?
Nay.
The motion is to accept staff recommendations. Mr. Bowden?
No.
Mr. Fox?
Aye.
Mr. Holland?
No.
Dr. McConaughey?
Aye.
Mr. McCleskey?
No.
Mr. Robbins?
Aye.
Mr. Schick?
No.
Mr. Tankard?
Aye.
The chair very reluctantly votes to support staff recommendation. Motion carries 5-4. Thank you all very much for your presentation. Next item on the agenda is the time and date of the October meeting. As you all well, you may or may not know, the Atlantic States Marine Fisheries Commission will meet the same week that we normally meet. I'm sorry? Did I miss that? Let me take care of this as I'm going along so I don't lose my train of thought. That last one was enough to get me rolling anyway. So I've polled staff, and since ASMFC is meeting the week that we meet, there's a possibility that we as a commission may have to react to something that may come out of ASMFC. Don't know, nothing in the tea leaves, but it would be easier for staff if we met the following Tuesday instead of the preceding Tuesday. So,
what's the date?
31st. The 31st, Halloween.
Do we have to dress up?
I'll wear my costume every day, sir. So the matter before the commission as far as to what day we...
Move we change the meeting date to October 31st.
For second?
Second.
Second by Mr. Robbins. All in favor of the motion, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Any opposed? Motion carries. Mr. Travelstead, Mr. Grist.
President Commission, we have a request for an October public hearing. Corporation, the ASMFC recommendations or requirements for revising the winter tier commercial possession limits for scuff and porgy. On July 26th of this year, National Marine Fisheries Service announced a change to the possession limits for the scup winter tube commercial period. The winter tube period it runs from November 1st to December 31st. The possession limit will be adjusted from 3,000 pounds per trip to 6,500 pounds per trip. The staff recommends advertising for an October public hearing amendments to Regulation 4 VAC 20-910-10 to increase the winter tube period possession limit.
Considering it's porgy, that should be easy enough after today. Entertain a motion to...
So moved.
Moved by Mr. Holland. Second. For public hearing. Second by Mr. Robbins. All in favor of the motion indicate by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. Meeting adjourned. I tell you what, I thought this was a 5:00.